Bubble. Good afternoon and welcome to the first Burst the Bubble of the academic year. I'm Michael Quintario, and joining me to discuss the weird news from the past week are David Birch.
Ahoy, hoy.
And James Howe.
Hello.
And yes, as already mentioned, we talk about weird news, so let's get straight into it by going for one of the weirdest stories this week involving zombies. This is at in Toronto, emergency ambulance crews were called to an accident, only to discover that the scene, while being covered with blood and gore, wasn't quite what they were actually expecting, because they were actually called to the Resident Evil film set. Because some of the actors there had been injured.
So mostly zombies had been injured, I think. They'd been on a moving platform, and it had, shifted, and they'd had some minor to serious injuries of zombies.
One of the particularly great things about this story is just in some of the reporting, they actually said seven of the injured zombies were walking again on the set later in the day.
That is the trouble. You have to go for the head, otherwise they'll just come back at you.
Life imitates art.
Now, what really pleases me about this story is the caption that BBC News have put on the photo. Could someone who can actually see the screen read that out? Because it's just lovely.
Zombies are beyond the dead, but apparently not beyond minor injury.
This is my favourite part of the entire story. It's just quite silly.
I think my favourite part of the entire BBC News team is the guy who writes the captions. Yeah, so sometimes he just goes a bit mad. So no one reads them when they're checking. He just puts anything in there.
There's also a police sergeant turned up as well randomly. I'm not sure what they described the accident as on the phone. It was just like fall up when high platform moves suddenly, or whether they described it as like chainsaw attack in the middle in the center of Toronto.
If you do want a policeman at the scene going, "There's a chainsaw attack going on," we'll probably bring one. So
do you think the ambulance crew showed up and were like, "There's zombies! Zombies everywhere!" and called the police before they went any further? Because normally when there's a zombie apocalypse, you do want the police on your side.
Yeah, they didn't actually wait for the police to turn up before treating the zombies.
Well, no, that would go against your being a doctor. You have to get in there and treat the injured straight away.
That's true. Now, I know this news story does say minor injuries, but I think it goes on to say that these minor injuries included some broken limbs.
Yeah, a broken leg.
Yeah, I think broken leg is more sort of up the scale than minor on the injury scale, I would say.
Not for a zombie.
That's true, it's true.
I mean, it's not going to slow them down that much, unless they're those speed zombies.
Are you a connoisseur in zombie types, then?
Yeah, there's the normal kind of shambling zombie, and then there's the speed zombies that sprint at you. And depending on whether you're watching, a modern zombie film or an old zombie film, the speed zombies in the new films tend to just run at you really fast, so they're much scarier.
So that they're called speed zombies. Does that mean that if they go under a certain speed, their legs fall off or something?
it's the new evolution in zombie evolution.
The new evolution in zombie evolution. Bit redundant there, surely. How do zombies evolve? Do I actually even want to know how zombies can evolve?
I wouldn't question it. I think the main process is sort of body part reconnection.
Maybe they eat brains and they get the powers from the brains.
You're getting confused with Heroes now.
I might be getting confused with Heroes.
He didn't actually eat the brains, though. He just looked at them.
But everyone really thought that he did.
I didn't.
Well, then you're in a vast minority. Okay, let me rephrase that. Everyone wanted it to be that he ate the brains.
Yeah, that would have been quite fun.
That would have been more awesome.
It would.
Ooh, yeah, I see. I'm definitely a brain.
That is a brain, yes. And thus I become even more powerful.
I'm going to nod and pretend I know what you're talking about.
But apparently one of the medics on the scene was trying to figure out where the blood was coming from and which blood was real blood, which means that this film apparently has really high production values.
Yeah, if you fool a trained medical professional with the fake blood, that's quite good.
Also, when they started refilming, some of the blood would be real.
Yes. That's true. They are, in fact, going for their realistic look by maiming their actors on set.
Now with real injuries.
Hurrah.
Save on the special effects budget, just transfer it over into the insurance budget instead.
It's the next revolution in zombie film evolution.
You really need to stop using that word so much.
Moving on from films to TV, the BBC has had to embarrassingly pull something which it shouldn't have let out into the world in the first place.
Jeremy Clarkson.
No, not actually Jeremy Clarkson, just his voice. The rest of him's okay.
Because we have rescinded the rights to your voice.
But basically what happened here is that Jeremy Clarkson was going to be voicing some sat-navs, and several of these sat-navs were sold, and then the BBC kind of went, our own rules say that we shouldn't have any of our stars involved with a product that their show might actually have to review.
Would have been a bit annoying for the presenters of Tomorrow's World, because there's a whole world of technology they'd be forced to miss out on.
I seem to remember Tomorrow's World, actually, out of the entire show, there was kind of one minor thing that you might actually ever have to be involved with. And there were about five random things that...
Well, nobody has to be involved with a toaster. People just do it by choice.
What about cookery shows?
That's true.
You can't have any... You can't eat?
They don't review cookery books on cookery shows, generally. I suppose they couldn't endorse specific ingredients, because they might go on the show, we did a blind taste test between these ingredients, and this was the best, and then that's a no-no.
Well, was Delia Smith, was she on the BBC? She endorsed things left, right, and centre.
No idea.
I can't remember. She did have a show where she would say, I always use eggs from this place, and whisks from this place, and food from shops. Maybe she was on ITV, I don't know.
I think it's the fact that you can't review something and, like, lend your voice and name to it.
Yeah, you can't be part of the product production, I guess.
It's a combination. I just like the fact some of the instructions were actually, examples of the instructions were given, and it was like... Some things like, keep left. If you're not sure which side left is, you really shouldn't be on the road.
I think this would have been the best sat nav in the world.
In the world. Does it most sat navs advise you when you're speeding?
They have
the current speed limit for where you are, and they warn you if you go over the speed limit. Oh. The new ones do. So I was wondering if the Clarkson sat nav goes, you're currently over the speed limit. Good on you.
I really would like, though. Now what they've done is they've said that all the sales of this sat nav, all monies that would have gone to the BBC are now going to Children in Need, which is a different bit of the BBC rather than the commercial bit of the BBC, the charity, so it's all okay. But I'm hoping now that this means that because these things obviously exist, that they can get one and put it on the show and just have it advising Jeremy Clarkson.
It'll come back to bite him.
And he just, I can just imagine him getting so frustrated at the sound of his own voice.
I don't think so.
He just hates sat navs normally. I can imagine him pulling up at a junction where there's a red light and it syncing up to the sat nav in the next car over, and then both of them simultaneously going, time for a drag race.
What are you going to say? I can imagine him pulling up a red light and then the sat nav, just a camera shot from outside the car, and the sat nav just sailing through the window.
Because, improperly mounted sat navs, or.
just he got stop. Annoyed with it and just chucked it out of the car.
Oh, okay, I see. That window.
Yes. But, yes. And also, nothing here. Launch plans were too advanced to prevent the physical product going on sale in retail outlets. Launch plans were too advanced. That's like the space shuttle is down to about five on the count.
Well, the space shuttle does have very advanced launch plans.
Yes, that's what I mean. I can't see a sat nav.
It's quite complicated.
Surely you can just like ring up Comet or wherever. Who sells? I'm not even sure who sells electrical goods on the high street anymore.
Other electrical goods stores are available.
Yeah, and just go. No, please don't sell it. We'll obviously give you your money back. That doesn't sound like that complicated.
Well, maybe there were pre-orders and things.
Perform U-turn now.
Well, exactly. I mean, if they hadn't have done this, what would headline writers be doing? You need to... It's a special relationship that they have with journalists in order to give them the fodder for their headlines, which it's been a rather... Well, an obvious showing, I would say, of car-related puns.
Yeah. But have you got any comments on either of the entertainment business-related stories that we've talked about so far, you can get in touch with us via email. Our email is studio@camfm.co.uk. You can also, if you're listening online, use the web form, which comes cunningly next to your webcam and audio player. And you can also send us a text message, starting with the word studio, followed by your message. Send it to 07786 20 24 30. That's 07786 20 24 30. And we'll be back after this short musical break.
97.2 camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, your Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst the Bubble, the humorous news show on Cam FM with me, Mark Quinteo, and my guests, James Howe.
Hello.
And Dave Birch.
Ahoy, hoy.
That was Somebody to Love Me by Mark Ronson and the Business International. But now, back to the news. And we go from zombies to brains.
Wonderful link.
Oh, thank you very much.
This show's so well planned.
But what we're looking at here is that a study in Nature Neuroscience, so actually possibly a decent study.
Pretty highbrow.
Yeah. Suggests that our brains deal with good news very well, and kind of bad news just don't really take it in. So
We discard bad information, pessimistic thoughts from our minds, and don't give them the proper thought that they deserve.
Yeah, the trouble really is that this story itself is reasonably bad news. Because it means, you know, our thought processes are biased and we don't have the relevant information. But unfortunately, due to the results of the study, we're not going to
What was it about again?
Exactly.
People say, the authors said optimism had important health benefits. That's a bit I'm taking away from it.
Yeah.
That's confirming.
That's a bit of good news, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'll take that away.
Our brains keep us healthy.
Yeah. That's
good to keep on board.
It's quite a difficult one, this, because there's been quite a few studies that say that kind of optimistic thought and thinking happy things kind of reduces the risks of heart disease and other problems. But at the same time, it's scientifically, that's quite hard to do, because people who are more likely to have heart disease are people who smoke and drink and are overweight and have a history of heart disease. So they're probably more pessimistic in general anyway. So can you really deconvolute it?
Well, not according to this, because all that bad news about how rubbish their lives are, they will just be ignoring and will actually be quite happy.
Hmm. They tested 14 people.
Okay, I didn't spot that. 14 people?
Yeah, they did a test on 14 people.
Right.
So this made Nature with a test on 14 people, a biology test. So I personally, I'm quite pessimistic about this story. I think they need to do more research.
That is really quite a low sample.
like all science stories, it doesn't matter about the numbers because it has the words brain scanner.
That's true.
It does contain the words brain scanner.
I mean, even L'Oreal does better than 14.
There's a quote in this that I really love. It says that UCL, who did the study, said that about 80% of people are optimists. But I've actually done some research on this, and I found that 1 in 5 of their researchers completely disagree. They think completely the opposite, actually, that everyone's a pessimist.
I see what you did there. Sorry, I'm a bit slow.
You're too busy thinking about the positive aspects of this story.
Well, I'm not really an optimist myself, so I don't suffer from these.
Hang on, so you're a pessimist, I'm a pessimist. Michael?
I am actually an optimist.
Right, so we've gone from 14 to 17, and now we have...
What's the updated percentage?
and we've got one more optimist and two more pessimists. That must be, like, now only 60%.
I'm very optimistic we're going to completely overturn this study.
Mm.
Yeah, so if anyone out there would like to email in and we can build up our own little study.
If there are more than 14 people listening, which I admit is a slim possibility.
It's tenuous. I'm pessimistic about this.
We could get an even better result than Nature have. Or UCL, rather.
So, if you could just tell us whether you're optimistic or pessimistic. Sadly, we won't be able to put you in a brain scanner, but I don't know.
We could put a hat on you, tell it's a brain scanner, you know?
Yeah. Well, basically, we should actually tell you what this story is. It actually did.
Have we not done so in perfect clarity already?
No, but basically what they did is they told people, asked people, so what do you reckon your chances of bad things like divorce or cancer? And they got a percentage, and they said, aha, the real percentage is this across the population. And then a little while later they said, so what do you reckon your chance of that bad thing happening is? And all the people who had overestimated it kind of brought it down to close to the average. Well, all the people who were underestimated just carried on vastly underestimating it. Just slightly not so badly. So there you go. That's.
They also took brain scans with a brain scanner.
Yes, and as the caption on the photograph points out in this article, don't worry, everything will be fine, says the brain.
I think that adds another point to my study on just how bored the caption guy at the BBC is.
I like to imagine it as the character from the cartoon.
Oh, it's from Pinky and the Brain.
Oh, can anyone do the voice? I can't do the voice.
I'm pretty sure I can't, so I will not attempt it.
No, oh. I'm closer to being able to do Pinky's voice than the Brain's voice.
No! But anyway, moving on from that, we've got a link story which says that a study has found that Britons are among the happiest people in Europe.
How many countries did they survey? Two?
No.
You're not very pessimistic about all studies.
I am.
Yeah, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development finds Britons rating their position on the ladder of life at 7 out of 10. So we could just like combine this and do one giant study with our listeners and just go, as well as telling us whether you are an optimist or a pessimist, tell us how good your life thinks, how many out of 10 you would give your life, and we'll see if those correlate.
Does that economic what's it of thingy, is the abbreviation for that EGAD?
What?
The Economic Cooperation and Development
something.
ECAD.
ECAD. ECAD.
OECD.
Well, though,
that's
probably
not ECAD. Yeah. That's the slightest.
Yes, it is.
Is
ECAD.
Moving back to the story.
Yeah, sorry.
One of the nice things they did here was they took various events that can happen in your life or situations that you can be in, and they worked out how much happier or unhappier that could make you and correlated that to wealth, so income. So, for example, they said that people who are married are happier than people who are not married by an equivalent to a 3x increase in their income.
Okay, yeah, that's
which is quite a lot.
I'd like to know what the like base income was to start with, because does this mean that people who are rich to start with get more benefit out of being married?
I think it's irrespective of what your income is. I think it's you're happier by the amount, as if you had a pay rise of 3x as much.
So basically, what this is saying is get rich before you're married,
and then you'll be even more wealthy.
To be honest, I think my wedding day was much more enjoyable than if I'd got a pay rise.
Was your life 3x as rich afterwards?
Many more times so.
I think the reason this particularly amuses me is because the other stat they give is that the negative aspect of being unemployed is like having 1/8 of your income. And I just
now, hang on a second.
That was exactly my thoughts as well. So you think it probably is quite equivalent to having 1/8 of your income, because you have about, well, 1/8 of your income.
Well, no income. You have none of your income.
Well, they're approximately about the same, right?
So if you've got a job earning £500,000 a year, say, I'm not a mathematician. I don't have a calculator. I wish I'd chosen an easier number.
I wish you'd chosen to use English as well.
So hadn't I. And you become unemployed. They're saying that it's still as if you've got like a 30,000 salary when actually you have nothing. So I think we've blown this study right out of the water.
That's us knocking studies down left, right and centre.
Yeah.
We have actually just had an email from someone who hasn't put their name, but said, "I'm an optimist, and today my happiness is definitely 10 out of 10. Also, I can see you." Well, congratulations, you've discovered the fact that we have a new webcam.
We can see you too.
I'm betting you can't see me, though, because I'm on the tiny chair in the corner.
But I think now we should release the results of our own study, which is 100% of our listeners are optimists and 10 out of 10 happy with their lives.
Well, with
listening to this show actually just does that to you.
Indeed. But I think you have to add that to the results we've found here in the studio, and then it's a 50-50 split.
So we found that listening to the show is better than being on the show.
Oh, yes.
There is that as well. And we're now 4/17 of the way to a paper in Nature.
We are.
Assuming that people respond to our call for funds for a brain scanner.
That is a good point. Can we have a brain scanner?
I'll ask the station manager.
or if any of the listeners have a brain scanner, perhaps they could email it in.
There's a challenge for you there. Email in a brain scanner.
Or in fact, just scan your own brain and send us the results of that. You know, any handheld brain scanner, we can use our expert analysis to
have a good look over it.
Have a good look, and then, you know, we'll all publish and be rich and famous by a factor of two marriages.
But also here, one thing I've got from this article is that Britons on average spend just 2 minutes a day volunteering, which I don't know, just imagining 2 minutes volunteering.
It's you're not going to get much done, are you?
No, it's kind of like, do you have like a whole line of people doing 2 minutes volunteering to like create the soup to hand out to people?
I don't know. I mean, what sort of level of volunteering? I mean, I volunteer to hold a door open for someone. and like to give someone the time. I suppose if you added that all up, that would be about 2 minutes. So
you've volunteered to do this.
Exactly. So I'm more than doing my fair share.
I am actually an Explorer Scout leader, and so does that mean, since I'm spending all my time doing that, there's just a load of really lazy people out there.
I think we can conclude there are lots of lazy people out there.
Hmm. Yet another result for our show.
Indeed.
I don't volunteer to do anything. In fact, I was press ganged onto this show. Help. What's next?
So someone has pointed out that studies of this grade, which they seem to be... I'm not sure whether they're saying high grade or low grade.
Of this grade,
this particular grade, are typically conducted with flatbed brain scanners. Ah. They're pretty unwieldy.
They only scan flatbed brains.
Yeah, is that like flatbed paper scanners? You have to like mash the brain flat where you can actually scan it. Well, and then it takes... Like, do they still use a serial connector? Instead of a USB is still serial. Well, you know what I mean.
Serial.
I'm going to do this in the office by just getting somebody's head and ramming it into the photocopier.
Yeah, if you can break the glass, you can get a good 3D scan. Because the hospital will do that for you.
Oh, I'm going to do that on Monday.
Someone should probably alert the authorities to that.
Yes, and the other thing is that the OECD have been trying to find ways to measure gross national happiness, which is considered a better guide to a society than just national income.
Is that national happiness before tax?
I mean
happiness tax.
I did actually see, did you ever see, I think it was Dave Gorman did a show.
I have seen him.
To try and work out whether astrology worked, and he developed and he came up with the unit of the happy, which is how much...
Love plus health plus wealth equals happiness.
Ah, yes, there we go. And one happy was basically using the wealth section of that to calibrate it. So if you found a pound, that's plus one happy. And everything else is measured in relation to that.
Maybe we should redo that study in happies.
But yeah, if your income is going up three times, then surely that's just multiplying your happies by three times.
Yes, I suppose it would be.
Yeah, so it already works with the units that we've got.
That's assuming that you have no love or no health. At all. So if you're dead and no one loves you and your income triples, then you're three times as happy, but still dead.
Could be a zombie.
Could be a zombie.
Yeah, I hear you get good acting work.
Yeah.
Zombies want love too.
Although, very poor health insurance.
Oh.
It's a risky job.
And moving on to the last in this section, we've got this is, I think, unambiguously a happy story. So I'd like to see
what we can do.
How you pessimists deal with this. A woman, Mrs. Miller, ran her eighth marathon at the age of 27, winning the Chicago Marathon. And then, later in the day, she gave birth.
Sure, I'm happy to rise to your challenge. She had to run the distance of the hospital because the Occupy protests had taken up all of the roads. So the ambulances couldn't get to her.
Is that a fact?
No, I made that up.
Right, okay.
Well, on her doctor's orders, she ran half and walked half the distance.
I can imagine that.
Which half was which, though? I mean, did she walk the first half and then just pick it up and
speed up as the contraction started?
Barreling down this heavily pregnant woman bursting through the crowds.
I like the idea that it was doctor's orders. It's like the doctor going, "You will run this marathon. You will run half of it."
Yeah.
And you will walk.
I can imagine this being a negotiation as well. She's like, "I'm going to run the marathon." He's like, "No, you're not. You're far too pregnant." It's like, "We'll meet you halfway."
Or the other way around. "You're going to run this marathon." "I'm far too pregnant for that, doctor." "Fine, you can walk half of it.
But you must run for the rest of it."
Well, the contractions became stronger just a few minutes after she'd finished the marathon. And she understood what was going on, apparently. But the best bit here is when they became more regular, "We had a sandwich and then we left the hospital."
It's vitally important to be well nutriated. I'm struggling with that language again. English, I think it is.
This lady's absolutely amazing. There's a quote from her on the story that says, "I am crazy about running."
Yes,
you are.
I think what really happened is she just got to the end and stopped, but the baby carried on, I think. That's pure and simple what happened there.
But the other thing here is... where was it? Talking about crazy about running. Obviously, she's kind of... taken the knowledge that she's crazy and turned it into a positive for herself, just bearing out the previous story.
Well, the previous story was about British people being the happiest.
Oh, sorry, the story before that. I'm losing track.
I've forgotten what that was. It was something about not remembering negative things, and I think it was a negative thing.
Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, I'm crazy about running. That's what I'm getting at the moment.
Good. Good for you. If you are crazy about running or would like to contribute to our survey, which so far has one response, but yeah, we have a 100% optimism rate, so go us.
If you'd like to sabotage our our survey and decrease our optimism rate to 50%, all you need to do is email.
Yes, studio@camfm.co.uk, via the form on the website, camfm.co.uk, or via text message. Start your text message with studio and send it to 07786 20 24 30. And that was very quick. I am very impressed with that response. It's not actually a response. It's to the survey. It's an actual comment on the... story that we just said. Well, I'll do this before we go to a musical break and hope that some more surveys come in as well. Sounds like the baby got exasperated with the bumpy ride.
Well, I would be.
I don't know, she might have a very smooth running motion.
Perhaps.
Despite being pregnant.
It's very stop and start, though. With the walking half of it and running half of it.
Well, I don't know, she might have just switched one point in the middle. I'm not sure whether she's like trying to get an average of half and half for every single mile or anything.
Or every step.
Yeah, it's walking with the left foot and running with the right foot.
You just end up going around in circles there. There's no progress made at all.
But yes, we'll be back with more silly news after this musical interlude.
Online,
camfm.co.uk.
On air,
97.2.
And across Cambridge, you're Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst of All on Cam FM with me, Malcolm Taylor, and my guests, James Howe.
Good evening.
And Dave Birch.
Good afternoon.
And now we're going to move on to a story from the north of the country, specifically Blackpool, where a comedy carpet has just been unveiled at the foot of Blackpool Tower. So now you can stand on Blackpool Tower and look down and see loads of catchphrases.
And jokes, yeah.
I feel carpet is false advertising on this, because it's just made of concrete.
And granite.
And granite. Ooh.
Well, are you from the north?
I'm not from the north, no.
Okay. Michael and I live... have you been to Blackpool, Michael?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been to Blackpool as well. And my long-lasting impression of Blackpool, a lovely place, is that it's cold. It's very, very cold, freezing, it's grim.
You've obviously not been going at the right times, then.
I guess, maybe not. Blackpool is freezing, it's absolutely freezing, and they're calling it a carpet because they did some tests and they found that granite and concrete were the most luxurious materials that could survive the Blackpool climbs. And therefore, that's what they made the carpet out of.
Very good.
Thank you.
Well done.
No, I actually absolutely love this. Basically, what they've done is they put a massive square, a T-shape of concrete in the ground and engraved several thousand jokes and catchphrases into it, all of different sizes from like 1,000 different comedians. And it's just there, and you can go and look at it.
I like the fact that... where's it gone? Someone said, the designer said, it soon became obvious that Blackpool had become a magnetic chuckle point for the nation. And I'm just hoping... like a black hole. It's like Blackpool. A black hole sucks everything in. Black hole just sucks in the laughs.
What's a magnetic chuckle point?
But that sounds to me like something that's happened to one of the Chuckle Brothers.
It only sucks in jokes about metal.
To me.
Whoosh. Oh dear. I do love this. One of the statistics about this is that it took 5 years from conception to installation. It would have been a lot less, but somebody started engraving a shaggy dog story around the border and it went on a bit.
Oh dear. Deary me.
That one's not on there for a good reason.
Very good reason. I must confess, I don't really get the point of this. Maybe it's because I'm soft and southern. I don't know.
It's celebrating Blackpool's great comedy heritage. As I said, the Blackpool Tower was a recurring backdrop to photos of comedians.
So, like, whenever they went anywhere, they took photos of themselves, like people do.
But
I think somebody just did it because it was funny.
Right.
We need
another thing that's there.
Just for a laugh.
Right.
Well, they've just, like, redone up the Blackpool Tower, haven't they? And there's now, rather than, like, just, like, glass floor you can look down from the top, there's now, like, a panoramic view you can look out of.
They made it even more like the Eiffel Tower, then.
Basically.
Yeah.
But small.
Yeah. But the Eiffel Tower doesn't have a chuckle carpet.
I think that's a point in favour of the Eiffel Tower, to be honest. Lack of chuckle carpet.
Yeah, I quite like this. How can you not like the fact that there's just a bit of floor now that says knick-knack, knick-knack, nicky-knacky-noo?
I don't really know how to answer that question.
See,
it's funny, but is it art? Email us and tell us. We don't know.
We're not artists, we're all scientists.
We are indeed.
That sounded like that was going somewhere.
Sorry, no, I just stopped.
We are indeed. Wow, the tension just built.
Yep, sorry about that. bit of a false start there. Okay.
But moving on, we move on to animals, because we like having animal sections in this show. There seems to be ones even more than robots, which James is annoyed about, lack of robots.
Well, it's just every time I come on this show, there seems to be a robot apocalypse coming on, and... Well, I just kind of missed them.
You had zombie apocalypse. Yeah, you can't have multiple apocalypses in one go. That'd be greedy.
Apocalypti, I think.
Really?
No.
I was like, surely that's not the right one.
Possibly not.
Good. I am right.
If you have two apocalypses, do they fight?
There's only one way to find out.
But Moving on, possibly a sign that this show has jumped the shark. We heard this story.
Dear.
The story is man surfs, and it's one of those surfs.
Scare quotes.
Yeah, scare quotes. Why are they called scare quotes? He's like, man surfs.
Ah!
great white shark. Basically, this is a guy who went surfing. And then it just turned out my shark had come up underneath his surfboard.
Oh, he's American.
Okay. They're naturally attractive to sharks, are they?
I was just trying to work out where he was from. I just assumed it would be Australia.
Because of the surfing.
And the sharks.
That's very racist.
That is very Australianist. I'm not sure how much I trust this, to be honest. I mean, he's like, there's not really any other witnesses. He's just like, I was surfing a shark. He could just be making it up.
Oh, did no one, is there no evidence of this?
Well, somebody saw him kind of standing up in the water, but he did also have a surfboard.
So this guy's just claimed that he, in fact, his surfboard turned into a shark, or
no, a shark came up under his surfboard, and now his surfboard was like balancing on top of the shark.
Right? Is there not normally a large fin on the top of a shark?
He said,
and on the bottom of a surfboard,
he bumped into it and then came off the surfboard onto the shark. I think he said,
and then that's what happened to someone previously. So it's not an unprecedented event.
This is becoming all too common. I mean, just today I rode a tiger into the studio.
Did it come up under your bicycle?
Yeah, I bumped into my bicycle, and then all of a sudden I was on a tiger.
And then did you get back onto the bicycle somehow?
No, I thought if I got off a tiger, it might bite me, so I spent quite a while fashioning one of those very large plastic cones out of things I just happened to have in my back to put on the tiger so that it wouldn't be able to... I'm making this up. I didn't really ride a tiger into the studio. It was a leopard.
Niblack, the guy involved here, estimated that he was standing on the shark for no more than 3 or 4 seconds as a dorsal fin caught his board and dragged him about.
Niblack?
Niblack. Yeah.
That is...
Doug Niblack.
Oh, Doug. Okay, Doug.
Mr. Niblack.
Doug is a more acceptable name for a human.
The story has basically been written by a sportsmaster. It's a PE teacher.
A sportsmaster?
A PE teacher, that's what I mean. I got confused by the Americanisms in it. And so anyway, American, well, he'll have a sportsmaster.
Do they call them sportsmasters
in
America? Not gym teachers.
Oh, might do that as well.
I thought they were called gym teachers, not sportsmasters.
And the master of sports.
That's a much cooler sounding job title.
Well, anyway, this article reads like it's been written by one of those because they came on referring to the guy by his surname.
Oh, I see. Right, without prefacing
it says Niblack all the way through. Niblack! Get off that shark.
But, yes.
So basically... Some American with an unusual surname has claimed that he rode a shark for a bit, even though there's no proof of it whatsoever, and this got published.
Yep, on the BBC. No, on the Guardian.
The Guardian.
And basically also here, he said that he's still planning to go back out to surf, despite dreaming about sharks. It doesn't say nightmares about sharks.
He just had a dream about a shark.
Yeah.
Guardian are just publishing some dream some guy had now.
Assuming he did ride the shark, his quote for saying that he's going to go back out and surf again is quite good. Because he's like, I'll definitely go back out. It's just that, well, the surf sucks right now. I'll wait until it gets better, and then I'll go back out.
I like the fact that he's put a sticker on the bottom of his board, which is a shark with a red circle and a slash.
Like, no sharks.
Oh, dear.
No sharks are allowed to, like, reverse ride this surfboard. Yes, there we go. And, moving on to another animal, because I think we've had enough of that.
I've had enough of this ridiculous charade of shark.
Now we've got two people both trying to claim ownership of a cat in Stornoway. Because one woman, Nicola Dempster, said she bought the cat and had him for 6 months before he went missing in March this year. But Dylan McDonald found the cat and looked after him until he again went missing in August. It's not quite clear where he ended up.
Well, where's the cat now, then, if it's...
Original owner, I think. It's quite a long story, and I think it's mixed in there. But what strikes me about this story is that the BBC have entirely failed to use the headline, 2 Stornoway women involved in catfight.
Ah, missed the trick there, BBC. Unless that's the caption on the...
let's have a look at the caption. A sheriff will be asked to decide who should own the black and white cat.
Ah, must have been a different writer.
And I think the answer to that is Postman Pat.
Stornoway's in this country, right?
Yes.
Do we have sheriffs?
Scotland. By this country, you mean Scotland?
Yes.
Yo, okay. Do we have sheriffs?
Yep, Scotland does.
Well, England does as well. They don't do much, but
I'm just
we
kind
have
of imagining like a Wild West kind of scene.
No, it's you know, like the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Oh, okay. So
they do boring things involving courts
and taking everyone's money.
Not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore. No.
Oh, okay.
That's sort of tax collectors
and the Sheriff of Nottingham. Well,
current Sheriff of Nottingham doesn't take money from people, I think.
He must have a horrendous life, actually. Just people coming up going, hi, you're the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Surely he doesn't have to do anything else. Just go, hi, I'm the Sheriff of Nottingham. and that he'd be in every panto.
Right.
I have very low levels of what is needed for a panto.
Just going, that's probably not going to cut it.
But you know, one thing about this story is that Mrs. McDonald said she had looked after the cat longer than Miss Dempster and had demonstrated she could look after him better. I'm not quite sure how this is a point. It's kind of like going, well, I nicked his stereo.
But I can clearly look after it better because he allowed his to be nicked.
I've listened to much better music on it than he has. And also, I've had it for longer because I nicked it the day after he got it.
Oh.
This is not a legal argument.
No. I love this story because I imagine they say that they're going to have to decide who gains ownership of the cat in a court. And I just imagine it devolving into the two ladies standing on opposite sides of the court with the cat in the middle going, come on, come here.
I mean, that is the point, come really. On. I mean, you can't really own a cat. It's more sort of the cat just sort of
the cat hires
you for a period. And then, you know, if the cat doesn't like you, it, you know, gives you a pink slip. In the form of I'm not going to go there.
In the form of leaving.
Yes.
So our conclusion is that we should let the cat decide.
I think we should definitely let the cat decide.
Surely, like traditionally, the correct way to do this is say that the cat should be cut in half, and whichever one of them argues more that it shouldn't,
gets the violin.
But, modern day equivalent would be to make a reality TV show about it and then have an audience phone in.
That's true. That's true.
And this would also make some money, which could be given to the loser.
It could be. To buy a new cat, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or stitch the old one back together.
Everybody wins. A zombie cat.
Zombie cat, yes.
Yes, everybody wins there. And finally, in this section, this is one, there's not much to this, but apparently researchers have found that piranhas bark, croak, and make drumbeat sounds. And I have decided that I don't actually want to listen to the audio provided with this story because it will not be as awesome as what is in my head, which is just like the farmers getting together and there's like beatboxing something.
Beatboxing piranhas.
And that was my awful attempt at beatboxing there. And also rather going dum-dum-tsh, dum-dum-tsh, dum-dum-tsh. Because obviously all piranhas are Queen fans.
Obviously. Oh, I think there is precedence for aqueous predators to make drumming noises. I know sharks always make that drumming beat when they approach, you know.
Dun.
Yeah. And to instill dun, fear in dun. In their prey. I think piranhas are just following the next logical step. Much like Magnus Magnusson used to as well.
He used to make the dun sound.
No, he used to make a drumming noise instill fear in his prey.
Obviously, it was just switched off for that poor guy with the surfboard.
Yes. Otherwise, I think we've already established he was making it up. Yes. And the lack of...
He didn't mention that he heard the shark coming, and they do have that distinctive sound as they approach.
Exactly. So, another nail in the coffin for that American shark man.
Ah. Well, we've got some drum beats of our own. One last break before the end of the show. So, see you back in a moment.
On air, online, and across Cambridge. Your station, your Cam FM.
Hello, and welcome back to Cam FM. That was The White Stripes with Seven Nation Army. Sorry, That was Seven Nations Nation Army by the White Stripes. And this is Burst the Bubble. We've got time for a last couple of news stories, but first an email, a brilliant email. One of our listeners say that sharks use the dun-dun sound to catch prey by striking it in the first few bars of the theme while it's still in the suspense stage. The fish are therefore caught unawares by the defiance of dramatic structure.
Superb.
Thank you very much for the person on this random sender IP. We don't know who you are, but thank you very much. And yes, we've got one or two more stories to go for. Firstly, we've got the fact that the Samsung Nexus Prime smartphone was delayed, as apparently as a tribute to Steve Jobs.
Yes, although courts would suggest that a lot of their stuff is done in a tribute to Steve Jobs.
Samsung spokesperson said, "It would be the wrong time to introduce the device while the world was still paying tribute to the Apple co-founder." In response, Steve Wozniak has set up a permanent vigil.
Very good. And also, finally, the Wall Street Journal circulation appears to have been artificially boosted by them buying their own newspapers.
So I read this article, which is an incredibly long article about this complicated scam the Journal had set up, and basically they routed their own money through several other companies in order to make other companies buy their own newspapers, thus pushing up their circulation artificially by about 20%.
Yeah, after this show I'm going to go straight home and listen to this show on the internet.
That's all we've got time for. Thank you very much and good night.